Hi, I'd just like to say that I'm very nervous and thank you very much. Putting the microphone in front of me as well. And I'd just like to say I'm really glad to be here and clean today and, you know, to have the privilege to be speaking about recovery, you know, all these years later. And to know some of the people that are here and, you know, have watched some of you get clean and stay clean and go back out, some of you, I know, but to see some of you coming back and, you know, and I feel so close and connected to some of you. I felt quite emotional earlier and when the readings were going on in the beginning and I've done service with some of you and I did service with James, who's just shared, and you know, we are a family, you know, and that has been really reaffirmed for me recently, because my son's been clean a while and my daughter has just got clean, and I'm truly grateful for that. It feels like I got my daughter back, you know. It is a day at a time, and I'm, you know, no pressure for anybody, but it's a wonderful thing to know that this program works, not just for me, but for everybody who's here. I'll tell you a little bit about me. I was born in a family where there was a lot of love, but also a very dysfunctional family, which I didn't know until I kind of got clean, that it wasn't normal, although when I think about it on reflection, it was slightly kind of odd. That I always felt a little bit odd. I felt like I wasn't quite like everybody else, and I don't know if that was because I wasn't like everybody else, or whether it was just the feeling that, you know, as an addict I get, or because of the family situation. When I was young, I experienced some trauma outside the family and in a situation of abuse, and I think it sort of set me up for stuff that happened later. I was kind of a bit dazed by it for a while, you know, and I had a bad reaction to an injection for against smallpox, and I was very ill. And then when I was while this was going on, I was on a plane when I was ill. I was on this plane taken off from an airport in Canada, and it took off in a blizzard, and we hadn't got very far, and the engines caught fire, and we had to go back and kind of crash land after they'd shut the airport on this sheet of ice, and with the engines, you know. And I was sort of out of it, you know, so I kind of didn't really register with me what was going on. But the sort of adrenaline from an experience like that, you know, kind of set how I was, how I reacted to the world, you know. And I also, after that, I was on a boat in the middle of the Atlantic that hit an iceberg, and we were supposed to go and get... I was supposed to go and get into the lifeboats, and then I lost my mum, you know. And I couldn't find my mum, and I didn't know if I was in the right lifeboat, you know. I am now, you know. I'm in the right lifeboat now. But then it was very scary, but I loved being on the boat, you know, with the waves being like walls, you know. And the Atlantic, I never saw the kind of danger, you know, in anything really. And then we were on this, I was on the last car, my sister and I were driving across a suspension bridge in Vancouver, and it was swinging 8 to 10 feet, and we were the last car to go over it. It was the tail end of a hurricane that was ripping up trees in Stanley Park, and I was like, this all happened before I was 10. So I was quite used to being, you know, in sort of adrenaline-fueled situations where you might die, you know. So it was the most natural thing in the world that I used drugs, really. I think when I started using, I started drinking alcohol quite young, and it was all kind of around going to the races, having the champagne, going to the tent, the champagne tent, when everybody back to Winner and all that kind of excitement as well, you know. And also, you know, drinking after hours, after the dogs, you know. My dad was a gambler, so, you know, that was quite justified. But I was quite young to be doing that stuff, you know. I don't know about whether I liked alcohol. I just did it because everybody else did it. And I think when I picked up marijuana and hashish and cannabis, I actually felt at home. And kind of with the music in the 60s and, you know, the culture and what was going on and... it was wonderful. It was kind of wonderful for me. It was wonderful the first time, and I think I spent the next 30 years chasing that day, you know, when I kind of connected with the universe, you know. And it didn't kind of happen again, really, not like that, you know. It was like, and the music that I still love the music. There's still some rock and roll bands around that, you know, that were around then, and I still like music, you know, and all the other stuff that goes with it, except I don't take drugs anymore, you know. The problem with, you know, smoking dope is that you can't get up in the morning for work, you know. It sort of discourages you from wanting to do anything, really, except look at the sky. And you know, and then I took acid, and the acid kind of added to the kind of colours of the rainbow. the one trip after another, and it was like there was the yellow trip, and there was the kind of fire trip, and there was then there was the bad trip, you know. And I was like, how do you get off this? I don't know how to get off this trip. I was just kind of like, oh. And, later on in my using, after I'd done this geographical to this town, I couldn't believe the people that were kind of walking out on the streets, you know, drunk and taking acid, you know, mushrooms and stuff like that. And I thought, what is the matter with them? You know, we used to kind of set it all out, and it was the right kind of dope to come down with and all this. But actually, by that time, my using was pretty out there, you know. It was like that thing in the basic text about, you know, being on an animal level, you know, survival. And you know, the habits that you get into, you forget the kind of graces of living, and it's all about a day, you know, every day waking up with the nightmare in your head and the other one in your gut, and thinking, I've got to get some drugs in me, I've got, you know, got to get some money to get some drugs. And then it occurred to me that the only time that I had any money, you know, really, they were shit drugs, and I didn't feel all right most of the day, you know, maybe, you know, an hour or so, you know, and that got shorter and shorter, and I found myself, you know, in places I didn't want to be, hanging out with people I didn't really want to be with, you know, I didn't have any choice, and I dragged my children on my rock bottom, you know. I was very ashamed about that. I had a lot of guilt around all of that, and having, you know, two kids and a habit is not a good place to be. And I ended up living in a caravan in the middle of nowhere, really. Felt like the middle of nowhere. And we had no money. The dog lived on rabbit food. The cat went hunting on its own. And the kids thought that starvation was being vegetarian. And, you know, a kind of... I had a desire to stop using, but it never got further than the next drug, you know. Like James was saying, you know, whoever turned up, you know, or come over, or, you know, somebody had some drugs, or I would be bored, you know. I couldn't get through a day without using. And, you know, and I was being, I don't know, I was being taken to visit my boyfriend in Chelmsford prison, and the guy that was the key worker for my boyfriend, who was taking me to visit him, so I said to him, you know, I just don't know what's happened to my life. I used to have a sense of honor, you know, I used to have principles, and I don't know what happened to me. And he said it's funny you should say that. He said, principles. He said that I go to a fellowship where they have 12 spiritual principles. And I thought, because by that time I had investigated religion a little bit, and I'd been to church, you know, as you do, sort of, when you're desperate and you're in this spiritual black pit, stuck in the treacle and the mud of not being able to get out of it. And I kind of picked up a couple of books. One of them was The Imitation of Christ, and I read that. And, you know, I apologize if anybody is a Christian, but it's like I could not. I just thought, this is too hard. I can't do this. I can't. You know where. You know how. You know all the things you have to do. You know. And then I picked up this other one, which was the 12 Spiritual Principles of Saint Ignatius, and that was hard too. And I thought, and all the people in church were really bright and shiny, and I couldn't go there on Sundays. I used to go in the week, you know, the kids are at school, nobody noticed, you know, and it was just me and God and the vicar, and. And I said to God, look, you know, see what a mess I am. I couldn't walk down the road. My kidneys hurt, my liver hurt, my head hurt, everything hurt, my heart hurt, you know. And I said to God, look, I'm a mess, you know. Please do something with me. And and I didn't have a bolt of lightning, you know, come, woo, you know. Dang, you know, like the movies. It's not like that. No, it wasn't like that at all. I went on for another 2 years, you know, trying to white knuckle, get off the drugs, you know, swapping drugs, swapping chemicals, doing, you know, other things, you know, and the people gave me books. Like, I got this book, Bo Lozov book, that was like what they gave you in prison, which is like the cross and the switchblade or something, you know. And this friend of mine gave it to me to read. And one of the things that it talked about in there was meditation and, you know, how you could kind of get out of the prison of your mind in meditation. And I thought, well, this is interesting, you know. I wonder if I could do something about that, you know. And I tried to meditate, looking at a candle, or, you know, doing all these difficult things, you know, but then my head became with the obsession of, when are they coming with the drugs, you know, when are they going to be here, you know. And my body would go into some kind of withdrawal, and you know, and then it'd be all about me, you know, you know, they're doing it to me, why aren't they turning up, you know, and all that stuff that goes on. And but I kept trying to get clean, so I white-knuckled about 3 methadone programs and got to the point where, you know, this guy had told me he went to meetings and he took me to my first meeting. And I got a copy of the basic text. And I thought, I read it from cover to cover. I was amazed. It was like God had given me this book. Because I couldn't do the other two books, you know, the other spiritual exercises, if you like, because I'm not a saint and I'm not a master, you know. And I have to remember that, you know, that I read the basic text and thought, I can do this. There's 12 steps here, you know, that it was designed especially for addicts, and it inspired me, it frightened me. I wondered how I could do it, you know, get do the program. I went to meetings. I got phone numbers. I didn't have any money, and I made this book with some string and a piece of paper, you know, like a little book like this, folded up. And it was my phone book, you know, because we didn't have mobiles then. It was, and I had all the numbers in it, and then I lost it. And it was really difficult because I had to get from, you know, from where I lived out in the sticks to London meetings, because there weren't any meetings where I got clean. And, you know, people used to drive a long way to pick me up and take me to a meeting, and I'm always going to be grateful to those people. And what I learned was I can't give it back to them, but I can pass it on, you know. I give lifts to people. I look after newcomers sometimes when, you know, they don't really know what they're doing in a meeting. It's kind of like landing in the meeting. You just don't know what's going on. It's like confusing, and everybody seems to be laughing and happy, but, you know, we're here because we've been in hell, you know, with the hell of using. And, you know, when I got clean, I just wanted one day to feel that I didn't want to use, that I didn't have to use. And I got a key ring. I got through a day without picking up any drugs, and I got this key ring, and a white one, just for today. And I thought, nobody's going to take this off me. I'm going to keep this. This is, you know, I don't care who comes round with drugs. I don't care. I want this. I want this way of life, you know, that they're talking about. Because people looked happy, and I hadn't laughed for years. I really just didn't, you know, didn't connect. I was shut down and unhappy, you know, and I don't know what happened at that meeting, because I went to this meeting with this guy, and he said, you know, he said to listen to the similarities, not the differences. And I looked at everybody, and I did recognize the similarities, but after I left, I started picking the differences and thinking, oh, you know, but, you know, this one's this and that one, you know. And what was I doing in that meeting with all those derelicts, you know? And this voice kind of spoke to me over my shoulder. I remember it distinctly. And it said, you are one. And I think that's when I surrendered. I think that's when I just went, okay. Because I was sitting in this caravan with the cats. There was a table that's a bit like this, and there were lots of circuit boards. They were making circuit boards for electrical things. And you know, there were cats everywhere, and they were all over in the corner plotting out, you know, they're going to pull the phone box over to get the money out to go and score, you know. And I suddenly looked up and I thought, what am I doing with all these nutters, you know? How did I get here? I'm living in this caravan, right? Anyway, I don't know quite what happened. I went to meetings. I kind of remember there was an addict. Well, he was an addict, but he was a witch in the caravan opposite, and and he turned out to be a member of the other fellowship, and he offered to take me to a meeting. And I thought he was a bit mad, you know. He was talking about, they're not going to keep us out of Stonehenge, you know, we've got helicopters. And I kind of thought, yeah, you know, electronic broomsticks, you know. And and so I said, my sister was an alcoholic and my brother-in-law was an alcoholic. And when I went to Glastonbury, all the alcoholics were causing mayhem, you know. So it's like, wherever there's alcohol, there's trouble, you know. They leave their cans everywhere. And you know, so I don't want to go there. So I said to him, no, I'm going to go to NA, you know. And I'll get a travel card and I'll do 3 meetings. But then there was this day and I was in so much pain. I was, So I went and knocked on his door and I said, are you going to a meeting tonight? And he went, yeah. He said, the only trouble is, he said, we've had a group conscience and we decided we don't want addicts in our meeting. This is like a long, long time ago, and it was out in the country. But I thought, well, fuck you. I didn't want to go anyway, you know what I mean? I'm going to NA. And I have to say that I think I was meant to be here. I love this fellowship. I have had occasion to go to other fellowships and have a look and see, you know, what's there, really. And, you know, the information. Because when I got clean, I wanted to know, well, where's the literature about relationships? How do I work this in a relationship, you know? Because I was living with a barking mad addict who kind of really wanted me to use, you know, and didn't like me being clean. And they said, there is a fellowship, I think, for that. And I kind of thought, oh, right. And I went to a couple of them, you know. They were all crying in one, and they all seemed to be a bit sick in the other one. And I liked NA, everybody was laughing, you know. So anyway, I don't know. I mean, it took me like 14 years to get round to recovering from that stuff. And I'm still in a process, you know. My first sponsor had nice boots. My eyes never went up further than the floor, really. But she actually turned out to be a really beautiful person, very much younger than me. I didn't know why I was, you know, why I was kind of, you know, because when I was looking at the differences, you know, we call it reservations, don't we? You know, it's like, well, you know, what do you know about my life? I've been on the telly. Yeah. I've been married twice, you know. I've got two kids, you know. She was only 25 or something, you know. But actually, what she knew was how to work the steps. And she showed me how to work the steps. And she loved me, you know. She gave me unconditional love. I was pretty crazy. I was like the wild woman from the woods, you know. I tried to grow dreadlocks, but never succeeded. So I ended up with very matted hair. I just kind of had a pair of trainers on for 2 years that hadn't really been off my feet. I was always like face down with mascara running down my eyes. And it was pretty miserable, you know. And I woke up one day and I looked around and I thought, you know, and I heard this woman on the radio and she was talking about her childhood and how she'd had a really rotten childhood and a really traumatic stuff had happened to her. And, you know, I didn't think about it, being relative to me, but I thought about my children and I thought about how what the way my lifestyle was and what I was doing and the people I was hanging out with and, you know, how disadvantaged I made my children. And she said it could have destroyed me. But she said what it has done is made me a stronger person. And I thought, yeah, it could destroy them, but I hope it makes them stronger people. And I think both of them are very strong characters, actually. And they've both got this program, so I'm really, really grateful to God for bringing me through that time, you know. And then, my first inventory, I didn't know what I was doing. We didn't have a working guide, and I had an understanding of God that was like, I tried to keep it simple. I stopped trying to look for the answer in theology, you know, the witch, the vicar, you know, even yoga. It was just like, this is all too complicated, you know. And I started to pray in my bedroom, down by the side of my bed, and I felt like, oh my God, I was more embarrassed praying on my own than I was, you know, in church. And I kept looking around to see who was watching me, you know, to see if they're kind of, you know, if there was anybody there, because I felt like there were a load of people there. It was probably my higher power, you know, my angels or whatever, you know, because that's where I've got to these days, you know. But it's all a bit cosmic. It was a bit cosmic then, you know. It was just like, oh, it was very simple though. And what it was suggested to me that I did was, you know, light the camel. You get down on your knees in the morning and you have the load put on for the day. And then in the evening, you get down on your knees and you have the load taken off for the day. And so, you know, it was like, oh, well, that's simple. I can do that, you know. And I did that. And my understanding and faith grew from this, I don't know if it's the God of NA or whatever it is that we all pray to. I don't know. I've heard a lot of people sharing that stuff. I was just thinking you were praying with me, you know. Like, but I feel like I've been blessed because I've continued to pray every day, even when it's hard, even when it feels like I'm just saying the words, even when I just ask God to look after me and I can't say anymore, you know, I can't articulate what I'm doing. It's just like some bad day, you know. You kind of have a lot of good days and then you have a bad day and then you think, I thought all this had gone, you know, and you have this bad day and you think, oh, what can I do, you know? And it's just to pray and have faith that, you know, I can stay clean, you know. I can stay clean through whatever and grow through whatever, you know. I've had really kind of painful stuff happen. I've had really wonderful stuff happen. You know, I've experienced death and loss. And, you know, I mean, when I was 14 months clean, my caravan burnt down. And it had my step four under the bed, of course. Well, I'd shared step five, and my sponsor said, well, I told you to burn it, but I didn't mean for you to. And I sort of don't know what happened, you know. It was like it went up in smoke, and I went to Brixton, and this bloke said to me, he said, anybody would think you've won the lottery. He said, you know, you kind of, you've lost your home. And I said, yeah, but what I've got inside is something that it's got nothing to do with the outside stuff, you know. I know that God's looking after me. And in that process, I learned how to work my third step. you know, just for this moment, I'm not going to freak out and scream and tell everybody how frightened I am. I'm just going to hand it over to you, God, just for this moment, you know. And that's how I walked through that time. I just kind of, you know, me and the kids, we just had nothing, you know, nothing at all. And what it felt like through that time was, you know, that the program was working, even though my outsides were changing. And I had a spiritual awakening on my step five that actually helped me to work my step three, which has become more in my step seven and my step 11. I meditate twice a day, and it is a very simple meditation, and I can do it when I'm on trains, planes, automobiles, stations, you know, wherever. And it improves my conscious contact with the God of my understanding and sometimes my misunderstanding, and I don't always get it right. You know, I've made a lot of mistakes in recovery. A lot of people have kind of gone, oh my God, you're how clean? You know? And, you know, and that's all right as well, because I stayed clean through that. And, you know, and I experienced those losses and all of those things. I went to university and, you know, I mean, I went to 13 schools, and I think the main thing I took was days off, you know. I didn't like school. It was an agony for me, and I loved university because I was open to learn. I had, you know, wonderful moments when I think, how did I get here? I'm a suicide from a caravan, you know. And what happened, you know, 2 days before the fire, my sponsor and a few people in the fellowship had said to me, go and put your name down on the council list. I thought, fuck you, I'm not living in a council house. You know, what? You know, but I did it anyway because I'd learned to follow suggestions. And the weird thing was that I jumped 600 places, and I don't suggest that anybody does that, but it's something that happened. And, it, you know, like everything went up in smoke, and it all came back down in a town where the kids could get to school, and I could, you know, get to shops. And made my life more. So in that process, I learned 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, and then I had to deal with my defects, which I won't go into here. Quite a few of you might know what they are. but, you know, whatever, you know, the process of recovery. And I'm doing service at the moment, and I want you to know that it's because I love NA. But this week, I've done 3 chairs. This is the 3rd chair I've done. Last week, I did 3 committee meetings. I listened to 2 lots of step work. I wrote my step work and sent it to my sponsor, and because she lives in another country. And I think by Wednesday, I thought, I've just got to have a rest. I've got to get off this, you know. And I slept for a long time. You know, one of the things I've learned how to do is rest in recovery, because we all drive ourselves mad running around. And, you know, and I went to yoga. This is my thing, you know, but it's exercise, you know, and I felt quite peaceful last night. You know, I really love this program, you know. If any of you are really grateful to be clean and want to show your gratitude, come and join us. We have real fun down at the convention committee meeting on the first Wednesday of the month. And I know you're all going to love the convention. And James is here to tell you it works to do service. And, you know, we've got some very talented people. You know, I have lots of opinions about what they should do, but I have to let them get on with it, you know, because I'm not there to tell them what to do. Keep coming back. If you just got here, keep coming back. If you don't know if you want to stay, keep coming back. If you I've come back from a relapse, keep coming back. And if you've got a lot of time, keep coming back and come back to service because we need you. This thing doesn't work. You know, we have to row the boat for it to be able to save people. And I'll leave it there. Thank you.